your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on The Gathering Radio Show.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Gathering Radio Show here on the Para-X Network. This is Heidi.
And this is Stephanie, and this is the first day of Mercury retrograde, so welcome to our madness.
And if you had technical difficulties getting on to the website or anything tonight, it's not your fault. It is Mercury retrograde.
Absolutely.
So, yes, and actually, we didn't have any issues, which is fantastic.
I know.
I mean, knock on wood. Oh, hang on. I'm like, we didn't have any technical difficulties. Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Well, I shouldn't even say it. Don't even say it, Hyde.
We're not talking about that.
I know. You know, it was funny because we were talking about this before the show, Steph, about how I've already had a schedule snafu today at the studio. Day one, scheduling gets messed up. But I mean, I want to say thankfully I didn't do it. But I still feel bad because my client thought it was Wednesday, and so she shows up, and I was scrambling. I was having a heart attack, like literally. I was sweating and panicking because I hate screwing up my schedule, and the client pays the price, right?
Yeah.
If I screw something up, so two people show up at the same time, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot to put an appointment in, and then I double booked someone, and I hate that because it's just an awful feeling. And then as we're walking, you know, trying to figure it out. And I said, gosh, I really thought you were here tomorrow. I'm really sorry. And she's like, what day is it? And I said, it's Tuesday. She said, what? I thought it was Wednesday. I'm like, oh, thank goodness. And I still felt so bad because I know it feels awful to screw stuff up like that. And so I felt bad for it too. But thankfully I didn't screw it up this time because I have plenty of times myself screwed things up. So, the retrograde, man, it'll get you. You just have to be so careful and double check and triple check.
Crikey.
And it's still going to happen.
Not to mention it makes us all a little cranky too, you know what I'm saying? It's just oofta, you know?
Well, and I think some of that too is because Mercury is all about communication, right?
Yep.
And so if you think of maybe, you know, misunderstandings, you know, as things are kind of moving backwards, maybe energy's moving backwards. So people are misinterpreting energies or misreading people, you know, as forms of communication, which can set people off. And then it sets more people off because it kind of just keeps passing around. And so, yeah, I don't know. I find Mercury retrograde helpful for other things, though. So I try and focus on the positives. And Jerry and chat room is saying, yeah, it can make people really mad at you. And I suppose it could, you know, I don't know if Mercury is actually making people mad, but I think it can affect people and how they feel. So I'll throw that in there. And but it'll be an interesting 3 weeks, everyone. So buckle up, get ready.
3 weeks. Oh, good God. Can I just say? Well, yeah. Let's just move right along here. We don't need to talk about this anymore.
Retrograde talk. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's just, you know, it really affects me. So I can only imagine what I'm going to be like in a week when it's really like the middle of it all.
Well, and hopefully you feel okay tomorrow because I know you said you fell.
I did.
So first day of retrograde, you're not a fan. And then you fall.
You bet. Yeah. Right on my tail. Then I hit my, and then I hit my my middle back on the other step. So, yeah.
So that's what doesn't make people feel good. And Mercury retrograde doesn't make you feel good. So hopefully.
No.
Hopefully that's not the beginning.
Maybe I'll just go to bed for the next 3 weeks. Huh? Oh. I don't know. Oh. Maybe that might be the way to get through it.
I would not recommend that.
No,
I'm just saying. Because I think other things in your life will fall apart then too. So
I agree. I agree. But I'm excited about the show tonight, Heidi.
I am too. Very excited. Well, I'll let you start because this was your awesome find, Steph.
Well, I've been friends with Katie Elizabeth on Facebook for, I don't know, maybe about a year and a half. And she is on our show tonight. And let me tell you what she does. She's a lake monster researcher full time and the only woman full time lake monster researcher. Am I right, Katie? Am I saying that right?
Yes, you are.
Very
So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this researching of this of lake monsters, because you know this is a fabulous subject and we talk about this often on our radio show. So to be talking to a researcher that does this full time is phenomenally exciting.
Yeah, it's definitely my life calling, and it started, I guess I'll start from the very beginning. I was 7 years old, and it seems like for some reason the seven-year-old age bracket seems to be when people start getting into, you know, as a child, into this type of field or into the paranormal for some reason. I've noticed that. I'm not quite sure the reason for it. But with that being said, yeah, I was 7 years old. I was watching Unsolved Mysteries, and back when it was really spooky when Robert Stack was the host, and the music always freaked me out. It still does.
Absolutely. Agreed.
And the episode on was about Champ, and it showed the famous picture that was taken of Champ in 1977 by Sandra Mansi. And I'm sure your listeners have maybe seen the photograph. That's probably the best piece of evidence photograph-wise of Champ. And I saw that on the TV, and I yelled to my mom, who was in the kitchen, and I said, "Mom, I want to go to Vermont. There's a dinosaur there in the lake." And she's like, she looked at me like, "What?" And she says, "What are you watching anyway?" And she's like, "Oh, well, wow, that's fascinating, you know." I'm like, "Mom, can we go there for like a vacation this summer?" And she's like, "Well, find out how far away it is." So I pulled out the old Rand McNally map. That's before we had GPS, and I looked up how far it was, and she's like, "Oh, well, maybe we'll go." And she kind of just gave me the runaround, you know, and I'm like, darn, I really wanted to go. And it was funny because from that point, I went to school the next day, and I went to my library, and I said to the librarian, I'm like, "Do you have any books on lake monsters?" And she like looked at me like I had two heads. I still get that look now.
Like you are a lake monster.
So she's like, "You mean like Loch Ness, Nessie?" Yeah, that kind of stuff. So she pulled out a few books on Nessie, one on Champ that was written by former investigator Joseph Zarzynski in the 1980s. And I was just so fascinated because I'm like, wow, this lake monster is so close to where I live, you know, versus Loch Ness with Nessie. So I was just totally hooked. And actually, up until, let's see, 2012. So this is years and years later. I started dabbling in the paranormal field, and I did a lot of paranormal investigations, and I had a lot of paranormal experiences. And I stopped doing it because I'm pretty much empathic, and I seem to be a magnet for this stuff. And it got a little scary. I mean, I had a few experiences where I used to live. My house was not haunted, but I had some experiences where I heard footsteps. I'm like, okay, I don't know if I want to do this anymore because it was kind of freaking me out. And I was watching TV one day and a show came on about Champ again. And I said, you know what? All this time I've been wanting to go to the lake up there and I have not gone yet. And I'm like, that's it. I'm going. We're going on a camping trip. So a few of my friends and I, we packed up our stuff and we went to an area called Button Bay, which is about 5 minutes from here, because I had heard of many Champ sightings in this particular bay on the lake. And lo and behold, this is so messed up because it was the second day I was here, I had my first champ sighting. And it was amazing. Yeah. So that's why I always say this is my life calling. This is what I was meant to do. I really, truly believe that, you know. And it was crazy because my first sighting, it was around 11:30 in the morning, and we had gotten, well, we stayed up really late the night before, as you do when you're camping, sitting around making s'mores. The others were drinking beer, you know. And so we kind of like overslept, and I was sitting eating my breakfast and stuff and looking out at the lake, and it was flat calm, as most sightings of these animals are, and Nessie as well, the flat mirror calm. I call it champ weather. When the lake is nice calm. And I looked out, and I said to one of my friends, I'm like, what the heck is that? I just saw this hump rise to the surface of the water, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe it's an otter, maybe it's a muskrat, maybe it's, you know, you try to be logical with your thinking, because I grew up in Rhode Island, the ocean state, and I grew up on the ocean up until the age of 7, and then I moved, like, 5 miles away to my grandmother's house, which was on a lake. So I've always been a water person, and I've been very observant with animals in the water. I've seen whales, dolphins, you know, otters, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was weird because when I saw this hump rise to the surface of the water, I said to myself, well, it can't be champ. It's too small. Like, I mean, I estimated it was around 15 feet in length, but I'm like, well, that doesn't explain an otter. They don't get that big, obviously. Right. And it was amazing because it started, once it started picking up its pace in the water, it started to crawl like a caterpillar on a table. That's how I can describe it, a vertical undulation. So I was like, what the heck? So I said, oh, God. I mean, I was just so enthralled in what I was seeing. So I said, I gotta go get my camera. And of course, I didn't think I was going to see anything. So I, like, run into the car. And by the time I got back, bloop, gone, I was just so upset. I'm like, are you kidding me? And what threw me off, too, is every time you think of a lake monster, you think 100-foot long, the long head, you know, long neck, the head out of the water. And 98, 99% of the time when there are champ sightings, you don't see the head and neck. It's a very rare thing to see. That's what got me started. And when I got back home, it was so funny. I started making my logo for Champ Search. I'm thinking, what am I going to call my group? And I just like started like saving up my money and buying all kinds of equipment. And now I have like 2 cases of equipment and I have a boat. So over the years, it's definitely added up. It's very expensive. That is the one thing. But if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life. So
right. Oh, exactly. Well, and that photograph by Sandy Manzi is pretty compelling, actually. You know,
I posted it on our Facebook page just so people could see what you were talking about. And it's really interesting.
Yeah.
It's amazing because what's really interesting was I've had quite a few champ sightings, and I don't like to tell people like, oh, I've seen champ like this amount of times, like, because people are going to think I'm insane, but heck with them. I mean, they don't believe me.
That's right.
It's just one of those things. Seeing is believing. And honestly, I wouldn't have moved up here to the lake if I didn't know what I've seen and what I've also recorded in the lake with my hydrophone system, which is another thing we can talk about in a little bit, whatever questions you guys have. But
so hydrophones are typically what they use to listen to dolphins and like orcas on the West Coast. Like, I go out there every year and, you know, we listen to the southern resident community out there and I love the sounds. So that's what you have listening for champ.
Yes.
And what do you get on there? Do you hear him or her?
Well, what's really interesting is I have gotten, I would say, probably 4 different recordings of them. And I'm going to say them because most people think when it comes to Nessie or Champ, that there or Ogopogo or any reported lake monster, that there's just one. And in order to sustain one animal can't survive a millennia. Let's put it that way. It's not scientifically possible. So there has to be a breeding population.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting with the hydrophone system, I have gotten recordings of three animals in one area. So three different voices in one area. That indicates that's one clue. I also had a sighting of three pop up at around the same time and do that graceful caterpillar-like crawl. And then once they start picking up speed, they can swim very fast. And like I said, you do not see the head and neck, which kind of stinks because it's like, that is like, hello, there's nothing else that has that head and neck. But I did have a head and neck sighting at one point, and I was really mad because I didn't get it on video, and my camera at the time was, I'm trying not to let out any bad words. It wasn't a good camera, and I was just frustrated. I was ready to throw it out the window, and I was just I was in such shock at what I was seeing because my friend at the time that was doing the champ research with me, he said, oh, there's two champs across the lake on the New York side. Now, this is, I would say it's probably 2 miles across. It's quite a ways. Mm-hmm. So unless you have it, which I have a good camera now that is 60 zoom, so I can zoom in really, really far on the other side of the lake now. Of course, I haven't seen the head and neck since. You know how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So these two objects, I thought that they were boats. And you know, there's two champs. And I said, you're out of your mind. Like, pulling my leg, you know, and he goes, here, look in the spotting scope. And I look, and there it was, two of them. You could see them starting to do the crawl as they got going faster, and the one in the front picked the head and neck up, and oh my god, I lost it. I'm like trying to get my camera to focus, and I'm crying. I mean, I cried for 2 hours after I had this sighting. I still get emotional because it's like, I'm sure you guys have seen the movie The Water Horse.
Yep.
And it reminded me so much of that. One of the scenes in the movie, every time I see it, I start bawling my face off. So it's like, it means that much to me because it's just, I'm like, if I told anybody this, they're going to think I'm a total crackpot, you know? But it validated to me that what I'm doing is so important as protection for this unique species, you know? I mean, they're not in every lake, obviously. They're obviously endangered, and that's my goal with this study, if I did prove their existence, which that is my goal, but it's not about, oh, I want to be famous for this and all this stuff. It's about protection, national protection for them, and bringing awareness to people that this isn't just a legend and a bunch of foofy baloney, you know. I mean, that's and it's the reason why a lot of people think that, you know, lake monster stuff is just ridiculous, and it's because the 100-foot-long general consensus of these animals makes it sound ridiculous. I mean, I have been out on the ocean and done whale recordings, dolphin recordings, and I remember I saw a finback whale, and I was in a 40-foot boat, and I said, oh my, it was the first time I ever seen a whale out in the ocean, like, you know, right next to the boat, and I was like, holy cow, like, I couldn't believe how big that animal was, and I said, wow, it makes champ look really puny. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, I mean, that's the thing, people say they're monsters, and oh, they're really ugly. Well, they're not the cutest things in the planet. Maybe they're cute, but yeah, they have a horse-like head, which is really weird because I work with horses. I've ridden since I was 7. And I remember when I had that head and neck sighting, what I found really interesting was that animal, when it picked the head and neck up, that neck was very snake-like and slender. And it put its chin up, and you could see the defined jawline. Like, it was just like a horse's head shape, just like it. But the jawline was a little bit more rigid, like rigid, almost like when you see a picture of a dragon, like artwork of a dragon, how they have like that, not pointy jawline, but close. And then, you know, it put its chin up, and I saw something in its mouth, and I'm gathering it was feeding. It was a fish, and it was putting its chin up like it was swallowing it down, you know, just swallowing it. And it was funny because I observe wildlife all the time, being out on the lake, obviously, and a blue heron, they do the same thing when they feed on fish. They'll gulp, put their head up and gulp it down, you know?
Mm-hmm,
And then all of a sudden, the really messed up part about it was the neck started coiling at the top. It did this coil like a snake would do. Now, snakes can coil, and they can even be tied in knots. They can tie themselves in knots if they want to because of their specialized vertebrae.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, my God, like, they have to have specialized vertebrae. How is this animal holding its head and neck up like that and coiling like a snake? I mean, it was just,
wow.
I mean, it was just unbelievable. So that sighting was just that was the icing on the cake, so to speak.
That's very interesting. You know, we have a question from our chat room.
Okay.
Let's see here. It's Kat was asking, is there a connection to that lake to bigger waters?
Indirectly, Lake Champlain is connected to the St. Lawrence Seaway. But it is indirectly. It's not directly connected, but 12 to 13,000 years ago, this area was an arm of the sea, and it was the Champlain Sea, and then everything closed off, and that's present day Lake Champlain. So indirectly it is connected.
So not currently though?
No.
Okay. So it's not like these creatures can get in and out to the ocean where they might be, you know, easier to hide. And then they come in at certain times of year. They're there. So when they're in there, they're in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're not leaving. Right.
No, exactly. And okay. What's really interesting, too, so I don't leave this out, is that I've seen so many documentaries on Nessie, and I'm actually planning on going to Loch Ness this July or August. I'm hoping I can swing
awesome.
It financially. It's not a cheap endeavor.
I've been there. It's awesome. It's so
Oh,
awesome.
That's great. I'm just really, really excited, and I want to try some of my research tactics that have never been tried there as well. So I'm hoping that I'll get some good results and indications that, because there's a lot of indications that Nessie and Champ are either the same species or closely related because of different sighting reports. And one of the things that I want to mention about, you know, everybody says that, you know, at Loch Ness or Lake Champlain, these animals are trapped in these lakes, but there are on-land sightings of Champ and Nessie.
Oh.
So in reality, they can pretty much go they're like giant turtles without a shell. There's been a lot of nighttime sightings in the marshland, which is my favorite thing to check out. I set out game cameras in the marsh. I look for tracks, drag marks, that kind of stuff.
Have you had any evidence with that? I mean, I haven't heard of any of them going on land. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. I know. That's what I was just going to.
It's really interesting. And I have a game camera video that I captured a couple of years ago. And what's really interesting is the location is right on the edge of a marsh, and there's a dirt road. There's this creek called Otter Creek. And right at the mouth of Otter Creek, the mouth of the river seemed to be a really great place, good feeding place for these animals, you know, to feed. You get the fish going in and out constantly. So it's basically like a Champ buffet.
Mm-hmm.
And in the marshland as well, I mean, it's a shallow area. There's all kinds of frogs, turtles, you know, snakes, whatever. I'm sure that there are opportunistic feeders and small fish as well. And they're hiding in concealment from people. I mean, we have 100,000 acres of marshland around Lake Champlain.
Wow.
And what's really, and it's so funny because I had done a documentary on the Trail of Champ by Small Town Monsters, and they did a drone aerial view, and I remember the filmmaker, he was so funny, he's like, hey, you want to see the drone footage on my phone? And I said, sure. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, damn, that really looks like, you know, when you watch Swamp People and they show mm-hmm. the swamp, like aerial, it's identical. I mean, the same kind of mossy looking stuff, you know, on the water, and the water's really, really dark. It looks like alligator land. It really does. It's a perfect place for, now this is my theory about Champ, and there's a lot of them reptile or amphibian. Now, a lot of people have said that if there are champs in the lake, they would have a huge effect on food web. Well, reptiles and amphibians do not have to eat much to sustain. They can go a year to a year and a half without food.
Oh, my.
So there's your, yeah, exactly. And if this was a mammal population, you'd see them coming up for air all the time. They would have a major effect on the food web. And, I mean, since I believe that these animals have been here since this was the Champlain Sea, I believe that they came from the sea, they're already built into the food web anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you think they breathe air? I mean, do they have to get to the air, or can they just survive under the water?
Well, I honestly think, I mean, if they had to come up for air, I mean, we'd be seeing them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tossed up between reptile and amphibian because a lot of the reports, there's reports of them sunbathing on the shore,
mm-hmm.
which is something that reptiles and amphibians do as an ectotherm. An ectotherm means mm-hmm. that they have to absorb the surrounding temperatures to sustain their inner core temperature mm-hmm. versus humans and mammals where we would be an endotherm, mm-hmm. where we have that energy created within our core. So it's a little different. And with reptile and amphibian, you know, a reptile would have to come up for air all the time, but the common snapping turtle, which is a turtle that's native to here, to this mm-hmm. region, they actually have specialized skin cells beneath their tail where they can actually breathe through their skin cells. So it's kind of like butt breathing.
Oh, breathe through their butt breathing.
Yeah.
I love it.
And with amphibians, they breathe through their skin. So I'm leaning more towards this population of animals being more amphibious if they are not reptiles. So that's just pretty much my idea.
And you said that Lake Champlain isn't frozen over still. So does it ever really freeze over all the way in the wintertime?
It has. It has, I think it was probably 4 years ago, it completely froze over.
Okay.
So, you know, you have to think in the wintertime, there's another question that's very popular is that, you know, how are they surviving? You know, the wintertime, how are they breathing underneath the ice? And mm-hmm. with being a reptile or amphibian, you know, using aquatic frogs as an example, as an amphibian, they actually, when they start to freeze, they produce a high concentrated glucose in their system. And this acts as a natural antifreeze. So they will not completely freeze. They will go into a torpor mode. Another name for that for reptiles is brumation. So they'll basically slow down. Their heart rate will probably go to about, I think, less than one beat per minute. So it's like hardly anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they can breathe through their skin or skin cells underneath their tail through their butt or whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they have a way. And where they go in this hibernation-like state, that is something that I'm trying to figure out. Like, do they go in the deep parts of the lake? Do they go in caves? Do they go into the marsh systems? Because there's a lot of deep ponds, like pothole-type kettle ponds out in these marsh systems where they've been seen as well sunbathing in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I try to get out on the ice. I do ice fish as well. So that's, mm-hmm. I do kind of like, you know, kill two birds with one stone, so to speak, and I'll fish. And I'll put my underwater camera down. I'll put my hydrophone down. And I've never gotten an echolocation recording or vocalization in the winter, which indicates to me that they're most likely pretty much sleeping.
Yeah. So, well, and I guess I asked that question because, as you know, we have a few lakes here in Minnesota that people have seen strange things like what you're describing Champ is, you know, the most popular being Lake Pepin, which is actually on the Mississippi. And, it, you know, although that doesn't freeze over completely, it does, there's a lot of ice on there in the wintertime. And, you know, Lake Superior is definitely gets frozen over. So interesting. Yeah. Although Lake Superior, they could swim into another lake as well if they had to. Well, we have to talk about more about this, but you know what? It's a half hour, so we need to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. The Gathering, right here on the Para-X Network.
More variety. You're listening to Para X.
Oh, hey Heidi, what are you listening to? Heidi. Oh, hey Steph.
Hey,
what has your attention? Oh, I'm listening to Para X, the calling radio show. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't. What's it all about?
Well, it's hosted by three guys, Jerry, Alan, and Will, and they talk about paranormal investigations, UFOs, cryptozoology, psychic phenomenon, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, well, it's kind of like The Gathering, but on Wednesday, right?
Yep, you got it.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling Radio Show every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time only on Para-X.
You haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to the professionals on What Are You Afraid Of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on Para-X Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on Para-X?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction.
We are ready to scare you.
Para-X.
How many seconds, Sarge?
Oh, I think...
We're not on yet, are we?
Gathering,
Stephanie?
Whoops. We were so busy talking.
I know.
Hear Sarge.
Oh, my gosh.
There goes Mercury retrograde.
Oh, my God. No kidding. You know, this is such an interesting subject for us. And so during the break, we were talking to Katie about different stories that we've heard right here in Minnesota. And, of course, so we have to, you know, chat. And, oh, my goodness. Well, we're back on.
Sure. But yeah, it is a really interesting topic. And we were talking about, actually, on the break, I'll bring it up because it is interesting. Yeah, and Kat in the chat room had asked earlier, and so I want to get back to that question or comment that she had too about there being, underground like caves or underground passageways that go to some other bodies of water. So I know, Katie, you had said that they've been seen on land, but also I wonder if there are places that we just haven't gotten to in some of these bigger bodies of water, like some of these lakes, that they are actually connected to other water systems.
Yeah, it's definitely possible because up here in Vermont, it's really amazing because we have Champ, of course, and then we also have Memphrey, which is another lake creature that is in Lake Memphremagog. It's a mouthful of a name. It's an Indian name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably 2.5 hours from here, and there's been a lot of reports there as well. And the surrounding lakes around Lake Memphremagog, there's Echo Lake, Seymour Lake, Crystal Lake, and I think we need one more. Maybe not. I don't know. I lose track. There's Lake Willoughby, and I've done research at Willoughby. And I've done research at Memphremagog, and I'm kind of dabbling in the other lakes are really small, like really small, like maybe 2 miles long or a mile long, compared to Lake Champlain, which is 125 miles long. But what's interesting about this, a lot of these lakes, there's a lot of surrounding marsh systems. So these animals could be going at nighttime, which I believe that they're mostly nocturnal. And the nighttime, when 7 o'clock hits, that's when the activity starts to pick up. It's a great time for feeding. The fish are coming out to eat the bugs. that's their feeding time. And I believe that's when we have the sightings of these animals, when they're just by chance a school fish goes up to the surface and they're like, woo, and they're chasing after the fish. Because I have seen fish jumping about, and then all of a sudden up comes that hump and ta-da, there they are. Oh. But it's not impossible to say, like, they could be going from one lake to another at nighttime. Nobody would even know. You know, there's been nighttime sightings in the marsh, like I said. Over at Loch Ness, there are surrounding lochs, Loch Oise, Loch Lochy. And the funny thing is, there's been sightings in all of those lochs. So I believe, like I said before, that these animals are somehow related. And they could be, you know, there was this documentary like, oh, how could they be going in these other lakes? They're not connected. Is there tunnels? Well, there could be. Loch Ness is extremely deep, but they don't think of the on-land sightings, you know, in particular at night. So they're really not limited to being stuck in there, you know. And I think since they're ectothermic, they could just say, okay, you know, the temperature's kind of changing a little bit. It's a little either too hot or it's getting a little cool, or maybe it's their feeding habits. They just say, hey, let's go to the next lake, you know, and check that out and see what kind of food's there. There's just so many variables with their behavior, but those are just some ideas.
Well, and that's interesting, too, that you know, the whole on-land thing, like, that never even occurred to me. I haven't heard of it. So now anything's possible.
Yeah, with the marshlands, that's really interesting to me, too. I had never heard that either, you know. And as you know, Katie, we were talking on the break about, you know, Minnesota has its share of reported lake monsters. You know, of course, the most famous, I think, is Pepin, Lake Pepin, which is a part of the Mississippi River, which goes directly to the ocean. But, well, you know, after 1,000 miles or so. But, and Lake Superior is another one. I forget what they call the Lake Superior one. But, like I told you, in the middle of the northern Minnesota is Leech Lake, which is a big, deep lake that has lots of fingers. It looks like a hand, actually. And I don't know if there are any other sightings, but as our Squatchers group was up north at an event and talking to eyewitnesses, and this guy comes up and was telling us about a few things he'd seen, but he talked about how he was on Leech Lake in a canoe, and something was in the water, and it was big, and it was messing with the canoe, was going back and forth. He was afraid the canoe would be flipped over, and he got a look at it, and it was like a serpent's body, you know. And he, with his hands, he showed me how big the neck was, and it was, you know, pretty big. I mean, I would say, I don't know, 12 inches, 14 inches round or something. And he was scared to death. Like, he told me specifically, I will never go on that lake again. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of marshlands around Leech Lake, you know. Now, I don't know so much about Lake Pepin, though. I imagine there probably is there, too, and we just don't realize it.
Definitely, like, especially with Mississippi River. I mean, I've been down to, like, New Orleans, and Mississippi is not the cleanest river in the world,
It's pretty filthy right now, yeah.
And it doesn't smell that great, I know that for a fact. Mm-hmm. So,
poor Pepin.
I know, the funny thing is about them, it doesn't seem to affect them. You know, with reptiles, I mean, you have alligators that have been found in New York sewer systems, you know? So, I mean, it's one of those things where they're primordial. They've been around for thousands of years, and they're just very, very rugged, you know? They're built for that. I mean, there are fish here in Lake Champlain that go back 100 million years. We have bowfin, we have gar, we have sturgeon, and, I mean, if they can survive that long, I mean, what makes people think that nothing else could, you know?
Well, exactly. So do you think they're like, these creatures are like some kind of aquatic brontosauruses? Because that's kind of what they look like, right? The long-necked dinosaurs.
Well, it's so funny because there's so many theories and controversy among cryptozoologists and other people that, you know, the plesiosaur is the most common theory. With the plesiosaur, they had, you know, this typical champ-looking type of body, the long neck, the, you know, small head. And the funny thing is, they do look like that because I mentioned my head and neck sighting, they do, but their neck is much longer. And with the idea of appendages with flippers, the island sightings seem to indicate that these animals have webbed feet, because there has been some four-toed footprints, like webbed feet, that look like flippers, but they have the appendages in between, which I think is very supportive of them being able to run across, you know, a dirt road with pretty good speed. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at a sea turtle or a walrus or a seal. Yeah. You know, they're like, I mean, they can jet, but they're not, it doesn't seem to fit the same descriptions as Champ and Nessie on land, you know, scurrying off. So, I mean, from far away, they could look like flippers, but if you got up close to them, I very well bet that they are webbed feet, which is really interesting, because alligators have webbed feet. There's Australian snake neck turtle, which has a very long neck, and they have webbed feet as well. So, but, yeah, I mean, we just really don't know. I mean, I've never seen a champ on land. I mean, that's, like, my ultimate sighting. I would die. God.
I mean, can you imagine going down a dirt road, like, in the marshlands at night and seeing this big creature crossing the road? Oh, my goodness.
it's pretty scary. I mean, and the thing is, like, I go out on the marsh and stuff, and a lot of times I'm by myself, so I have to make sure that, I mean, I don't carry a handgun yet. I'm planning on it just in case.
Yeah.
And, first of all, you don't know who the heck is out there. And, you know, being a woman is scary, too. But, yeah, there's so much to it. And there's so many things that I've done that nobody else has ever thought of. And it's kind of funny. It's been my life for so long that I'll be laying in bed and all of a sudden this new idea will pop in my head. And I'm like, oh wow. Thought of that, you know, and I'll write it down, and it's just every year I come up with new ideas, and hopefully eventually, you know, one of those ideas will pay off. And I'm hoping I get a really good head and neck video. That's not ultimate proof, because, you know, people can say, oh, they fake this, they stuck somebody in the water, you know, I mean, so many hoaxes out there, which really ruins it for the legitimate stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, but you would know then, right? So this is what we always say, too, because, you know, we're part of a Squatchers Cryptid Research Group, and that's what we always say, too. You know, we may never get evidence of any of these creatures, but if we see them, we'll know in our hearts of heart, because we've had the experience, you know, and that's what counts. And then you'll get hooked even more, right? So then you'll be out there even longer. More time will be spent out there trying to see that again, you know?
Oh, yeah. And that's like when I had the head and neck sighting, that was even... I'm like, hello. I mean, I was out there all the time anyway, but it just kept me going, because there are times it's like watching paint dry, as you guys know, it can get bored. I mean, I love what I do, but sometimes I'm like sitting there, I'm kind of like falling asleep. I'm like, oh my God. Yes. And in the summertime, it's so hot. And I mean, I'm sitting out there, I have to put like two freaking tubes of sunscreen on, you know, so I don't get sunburned.
Mm-hmm.
Bugs, and it's a lot of work and a lot of patience. I'm a very patient person, obviously. And if you want results, you have to be patient, because you're not going to see them every day. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Oh yes, Mike, one of our listeners said SPF 900, so you don't get burned.
Exactly.
Oh, we have the best listeners. They always come up with the crazy things. Wow, Heidi, I'm speechless. You know, I'm still reeling about this whole marshland stuff and whatever.
I think it's really fascinating. And one of the things that, you know, we talk about having proof, you know, that there is, they exist, you know, whether it's this cryptid or this animal or creature, whatever we want to call it. And same with, you know, Sasquatch and all the other, you know, Chupacabra or whoever else that we are looking for out there. But I was reading on your website, Katie, that you had a written resolution to protect Champ back, 2018, last year?
Yes.
Then can you talk about that
quickly? Because I thought it was really interesting when I saw it on your website.
Sure. So I'm always like thinking of like new ideas, like I said, and I'm like, you know, I'm just sitting there one day, and there was a law passed to protect CHAMP, actually two laws, one in New York and one in Vermont. And they were basically written by the, you know, passed by the House of Representatives in each state. But this is back in 1980. And then there was an additional law in Port Henry, New York, which is the home of CHAMP, because back in the 70s and 80s, there was like mass sightings of CHAMP over in Port Henry. And I said, well, I wonder if that law is still in effect. And come to find out, I have a couple of friends, and one of them actually had an on-land sighting on the beach in Port Henry of CHAMP. And I spoke to him about it, and he says, wait a second. He's like, the town dissolved. I'm like, what the heck does that mean? And he said, well, we have two towns here, Port Henry and Moriah. So now Port Henry, I guess the laws changed. Like anything that was in Port Henry was like kind of like dished out the window. And it was just, I don't know, like a lot of the laws were totally changed or like in not in effect anymore. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh no, I'm like the CHAMP law is almost running out. You know, I mean, they had just, I guess they were going to have some kind of a meeting, and then by this certain date, it wouldn't be in effect anymore. And this was in the winter. I think this, well, it was actually March of 2018. So it was still cold. It was snowing. Mm-hmm. And I said, I need to talk to somebody and see what I can do. So I'm thinking they're going to think I'm insane. So I ended up talking to him, and he said, oh, I know the town supervisor. And I'm like, oh, cool. So I went to the town. I called up the town hall, and I requested an appointment with the town supervisor. And actually, the funny thing about him is he's a very, very nice man, and he really believes in something in the lake, which is awesome. Someone had done like a really funny little spoof of a movie, you know, low budget film about CHAMP. It was called Champosaurus. It was really funny. Oh. And it was really well done, you know, for a spoofy type of thing. And at the end, I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'll have to send you the link. But, you know, they have like this horror scene where the person's out in the boat and the CHAMP comes up and then they all says, dun, 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 and then it's done, and you're like, oh, man, you know. But he was actually in, he volunteered to be in it as himself, as the town supervisor. So that's how I, you know, found out who he was. So I went over there in a snowstorm. I'm like, oh, man, I got to get this done. And I walked in. I was really nervous because I didn't know what he was going to think. And I told, you know, I showed him my videos. I showed, you know, let him listen to my audio recordings. And he looked at me and I said, do you think I'm insane? And he's like, no, absolutely not. And I'm like, phew. And he said, no, my uncle had a CHAMP sighting. He thought he had seen something when he was around 15 years old himself that he couldn't explain. Mm-hmm. So he said, well, okay, because I'm going to present this to the board. I'm not sure if it's going to be the next meeting, but maybe the one after that. I said, okay. And I said, let me know so I can be there. So I go home and everything, and like a couple weeks go by, and the meeting happened, and it was actually April 12th. And I was sitting at home. It was like 9 o'clock at night. And a friend of mine that lives in Port Henry, she sent me a message, and she says, guess what? Your CHAMP law passed. I'm like, what? Huh? What? I had no idea. Like, he never told me they were going to bring it up in the meeting. And I was so excited. I'm like, yay. And it was funny because when the original law was written by, you know, the town and everything, they had said, you know, it was basically about protection of CHAMP, the Lake Champlain sea serpent. Like, it was worded mm-hmm. really strangely, like, really mythical, you know? Mm-hmm. And I had said to the town supervisor, he says, well, why don't you rewrite the law and, you know, send it to me on email, and then I'll present it to the board, and which is what I did. And I reworded it as CHAMP, you know, population mm-hmm. of Lake Champlain. And it's, you know, hereby declared off limits to anyone who would in any way harm, harass, or destroy the creatures known as CHAMP. So I wanted it to cover the reality of it all, you know, not just one. I mean, I was just really impressed. And then I was in the newspaper for it, which is really cool. So it was really, really neat. And it was really gratifying that I'm their champ mom. I'm their protector.
Yes.
So.
That's yes. Awesome. I think it's interesting, too, that, like, I know Washington State has this, too, where these creatures that we have yet to really identify or prove that they exist have some protections over them. So then mm-hmm. you have to wonder, now is yes. it, does that almost make it official because it's protected? You know, mm-hmm. I just think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And you know, you think about it too, you know, if they're making laws to protect them, they got to know themselves that they're there. You know what I mean? Because otherwise they'd be like, we're not wasting our time on this nonsense, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those things, like, I'll go to the store and I have magnets on my car that have my group, you know, my group name on it. And you'll get some people that are kind of, I don't know. Yeah. You just ignore them because they're like, oh, well, you're nothing in the league. I had this guy one time, and this is my favorite story about a doubter.
I was down to the
lake, and he was just, oh, my God, this guy. So I think he was, like, in his 60s. He you know, wasn't a spring chicken. Mm-hmm. He'd been on the lake his whole life. And he's, well, I've never seen nothing. Oh, ha, ha. And he's laughing. And I'm just like, I have thick skin now. You can't penetrate my skin. It doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I really got him going because I said, hey, I said, I can ask you a question. He says, what? I'm like, look up in the sky. And he's okay. I see up there. I'm like, there's planets there. Do you see them right now? No. I'm like, doesn't mean they're not there.
Yeah.
And then the funny thing was he was fishing, and I don't know what the heck he was doing because I fish all the time. I do derbies and all that stuff. So I'm a pretty good fisherman, but fisherwoman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so funny because there's a porta potty that was up the hill from where we were. And this guy, he's reeling in his line and he kept backing up and backing up. And I'm like, where is he going? I mean, he must have went like 80 feet up near the porta potty just to reel in his line. And I said out loud, and I think he finally got the clue that that he wasn't going to win with me. I said, wow. I said, look at this guy. I said, he's been fishing on this lake his whole life and he still doesn't know how to reel in a line. So it shows you how much he knows. But yeah. Anyways, by the end of the day, the end of the hour that he was there, he came up to me and he says, you know what? He's like, I'm really fascinated at what you do and I'm very impressed. It was really nice meeting you. And he shook my hand and that felt so good.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome. Well, okay, so we only have 8 minutes left. I know this hour has flown by, and Katie, we're probably going to have you on again at some point in the next few months to talk about, you know, whenever you can come, because that would be awesome. But you have...
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Oh, gosh, you're so fun to talk to. So you do have a book already published out there called Water Horse of Lake Champlain. Why do I have a hard time pronouncing this? Champlain?
And I've heard people say Lake Champagne. I'm like, well, wouldn't that be awesome? Champs would be very, very happy and bubbly all the time.
Yeah, exactly. They like it there. but anyway, so that's available. Now, can people get that on Amazon or where is that? Where can we get that?
Yeah, actually, I don't have any books in stock at my house because I sold them all, but you can go on Amazon.com and look up Water Horse of Lake Champlain 2. My original book, Water Horse of Lake Champlain, I'm actually revising that. There's a few little errors in there that the printing company kind of messed up, so I'm very particular, so I'm like, oh, God, I got to get that fixed.
Yeah.
So the Water Horse of Lake Champlain 2 is the, you know, the newest book on Champ. But I am coming out with another book, Water Horse of Lake Champlain, The Search. That's going to be a really good one. And it's going to blow away the second one because I have so much evidence now. I have stills from videos. I have echolocation recordings, spectrogram graphs, you know, that you can see the sounds with pictures. A lot of evidence, a lot of scientific type of stuff getting into ancient amphibians and their size, and I mean, just it's kind of Greek to some people, but once you get used to reading that kind of stuff, it really is fascinating. And I actually just I will post a link to your page I actually just did, it's kind of a teaser for that book because all this information will be in the third book. But it's a PDF, and it's entitled America's Loch Ness Monster Champ. And there's a lot of great information in there about some of the findings and temperature readings in the lake that I've done as well that correlate with champ season, because there is a certain time that they start to come out when the water reaches around 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Oh. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff in that paper. So if anybody wants to check that out, I will post that on your page, or you can share it. And then I'm working on a children's book about Champ, and it's going to be called Hello, Baby Champ.
Aww, so, I love it.
It's really cute, and I had fun doing that one. That was like, I'm thinking to myself, Dan, I should write kids' books more often. This is so much fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then I'm working on another book at the same time, and this one is going to be called Enigmas of the Deep. And it's basically going to be a guide to lake monsters around the world, and I'm going to put some things in, because there's quite a few guides out there to different lake monsters around the world, but I'm going to try to do something a little different. I'm not going to say what it is, but a little different than everybody else, and incorporate my theories in there as well. So a lot of iron fire.
Yes, you are a busy girl. Goodness.
I know. Oh, I'm exhausted, I'll tell you.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? If you ever want to come to Minnesota and come and try to find, you know, Peppy or the Lake Superior girl or even the Leech Lake one, geez, let us know. We would love to have you. You can come and...
Oh, that would be, that would be so much fun.
We would love to be taught by the experts, you know, on how to just how to go about doing this.
Yeah, and I love, and I'll bring all my equipment, and we can, we'll have a heck of a girls' investigation. That would be really great.
Girls' Week on the Lake or something, you know, wouldn't that be awesome?
Oh. And in that 900 SPF sunscreen.
That's right. Well, I'll have to get some of that for sure. Well, Katie, it's been so much fun talking to you, and such an interesting hour and subject, and too bad we don't have another hour, because I'm sure we could fill it up and, you know, not even blink. So hopefully we can get you on in the next few months at some point.
That would be wonderful. I mean, maybe I'll find Champ by then. You never know. I sure hope so. That would be amazing.
And do keep in touch and let us know if anything exciting happens, or if you just say, hey, Steffi, I want to come back on your show because I want to talk about this. Do that for sure.
I would love to. I had so much fun tonight, and it was great talking with you. I had a blast.
It's been so fun. Oh, my gosh. So thank you so much. And like I said, whenever you want to be on again, and I'll get a hold of you, too. But if you find something exciting, you know, just like I said, just, you know, send me a line on Facebook and we'll get you on, because this was a blast for sure.
Yes, it was.
Great. Well, there we go. Another show, Steph.
No. It's going by so fast. I'm not ready to be done with this one.
I know. Well, we'll do a follow-up, a late Champlain follow-up show.
Oh, my God. Kat writes on the chat line that Squatch Hers phase 2, Aqua Squatch Hers.
There you go.
That's cute.
Our
that.
Sub group.
For sure. Oh, my God.
And I have a train going by my house at the same time.
Oh,
thanks.
I can hear it.
That must mean it's time to wrap it up. And we do have to thank Para X for hosting our show, and Sarge for producing us, and technical difficulty free tonight. So that was awesome. And all of our listeners out in listener land, and those of you in the chat room who were commenting and having fun with us tonight in the chat room, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And Steph, we have a guest next week as well, correct?
We do.
So, go ahead.
No, so we have Bob back on to talk about astro travel.
Out-of-body projection.
Out-of-body. I always say it wrong.
Out-of-body travel, out-of-body projection, whatever. Yeah, however we're going to call it. We're all going to say different things here.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Peterson's back with us, and we had fun with him when he was on before, too. So
we did. So another fun show coming up. And anyway, we have to wrap it up. So thanks for listening. Thank you, Katie, Elizabeth, for being on. And
thank you so much.
Oh gosh, we will see everyone next week at the same time, same place, same channel.
Thanks, everyone.